can he be successful enough to kind of rip that job from LaTroy Hawkins' cold, dead hands? I really liked that acquisition. I think that he's going to shock some folks. Very interested in Shane Green.
There must be like somebody's boss that watches these games through Twitter, because damn it, these tweets are out of control this spring.
Given that Tim Fedorovic or whatever is his backup.
By the way, I got to give you credit on Fedorovic. I know I've heard you talk. I do listen to the podcast. I've heard you talk about having player pronunciation issues. Welcome to episode 217 of the Sleeper in the Bus. It's your Tuesday edition. I am Paul Spohr, joined as always on Tuesdays by Mr. Eno Saris. Eno, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
That's great to hear. That's excellent. So your health is probably up. Maybe the kids are sleeping through, and you're in the full swing of baseball. One or more of those is probably going on.
Only one of those. I'm going to go see some baseball today. The rest, screw it.
Well, good. You are going to go see some baseball, and you've written about some baseball. We are going to talk about that shortly, some pictures that you wrote up. We do have to dive into the news. We're going to start with the only thing close to a negative that's coming out of Kansas City lately is this bit of injury news, as Alex Rios is going to hit the DL with a fractured hand. They're 7-0. They're clicking on all cylinders. You know, it seems like they wouldn't miss anybody right now, but obviously this is an impactful move here. He was off to a solid start himself. I expected Rios to have a nice season this year. That 709 OPS last year, I don't think was the beginning of the end. I didn't think it was going to stick. So I expected something in the upper sevens, maybe lower eights if things really broke right. He's in the lower eights right now with an 809 through seven games, but Rios will now be out for a while. How'd this news hit you? Do you have him anywhere, and how worried are you when Rios returns from the hand?
You know, I didn't have any shares, and I was maybe a little bit more worried than you were about this whole thing, because I just, you know, at 34 years old with a guy that the power hasn't always been there, mm-hmm. I kind of figured that the end would look a little bit like maybe a 270 10-15 season or something, or a 5-15 season, and that's pretty borderline. It looks a lot, actually, like a little bit like Norichika Aoki.
Yeah, no, that part is fair regarding the power. The one reason I liked him this year, and actually despite liking him, I wasn't able to come up with him anywhere, even though he's going at a good price. So either I was just filled up on outfield or wasn't looking for offense at all at that point, because I'm surprised that I didn't get him anywhere. But what I thought Rios could do was get the homers back up to the double digits, but maybe the speed takes another jump back closer to those big numbers that we were seeing from him prior to 2014. He only had 17 last year, but 42 the year before. Even the 23 from 2012 for Rios would have been nice if he's hitting, you know, 275 with 25 bags and 12 homers. But now we'll see what happens now, because now I'd be very worried. Obviously, fractured hand, that could really impact his hitting. So this could be a totally awful situation for him specifically.
Yeah, and you know, as much as I think that, you know, stolen bases declined very terribly and all that, I do think that the Royals like to go. So, yeah, I think those things were reasonable. The nice thing, though, is that if speed was kind of where you were thinking, mm-hmm. I do think that there's a ready-made replacement for you on the team, and that's Jared Dyson, who, you know, I can't believe it. Do you know how old he is?
28.
30.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's gonna turn 31 this year. So I'm surprised to see that, and you know, I think that means that you can't really dream on his numbers. There's no dreaming to be done. This is who he is. He's a platoon outfielder who, you know, may not hit better than 250, and but can still steal you 30 to 40 base.
Exactly. The P PT for Dyson is excellent here. The fact that he's going to get in a little bit more frequently, that works because that's going to really give him a good chance to get those 30 stolen bases that you picked him up for, that he's been able to get with very limited playing time the past couple years. But if he's playing all the time, you know, I don't expect big offense either. So maybe he's not getting on base as regularly as when he comes on as a pinch runner, because obviously somebody else did the on base work for him at that point. But he's going to be your 30 stolen base type of guy. This might just help him get there faster, pun intended. So, you know, if you desperately need steals, this is your pickup, even if you're the Rios owner or if you're somebody else just trolling for steals. Another DL move, this one in the minors, a little bit of a bummer. Rusney Castillo is going to hit the disabled list in the minors with a shoulder injury, which kind of puts off his arrival into Boston, even though Shane Victorino is doing nothing to, you know, hold him off or anything like that. The fact is now that Castillo himself is holding Castillo back because he's nicked up. So we're going to have to wait. I didn't see a major timetable on this one. Obviously, I think they only have a 7-day DL. So if it's a short injury, he could come off quickly, but it's a shoulder. So I'm a bit worried about it. This is a bummer because I'm pretty heavily invested in Rusney Castillo. And now it's looking like it's going to take a while for that to pay off, if at all.
Yeah, and the Castillo thing is also worrisome because, you know, that was one of the knocks when they sent him down, or one of the knocks just in general on him was that you're not sure about how healthy he's going to be in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're not talking about a 21-year-old where you can say, oh, he's just getting used to the game or whatever. He's a little bit older than that.
No, he's 27. And, so, yeah, this is not – just because he's new to us doesn't mean he's a new player necessarily. He is, 27. This will be his age 27 season. So that part's that's a bummer. I'm really bummed by his injury.
Yeah, and you know, it looks now. I mean, just from the fact that there's no real drum roll, no real drum beat about Victorino, and the offense is killing it up in Boston. It looks now that he's sort of waiting for an injury to get up.
Well,
he has to get healthy first, but then even after that. You know, just reading between the lines between Boston's fast start when it comes to offense, I don't think that they're necessarily, you know, like Betts has been playing really well. He had he robbed that homer from Bryce Harper the other day. So I doubt that they're thinking that, you know, Castillo is an upgrade at center. So if he's a defensive upgrade plus offensive upgrade over Victorino, that might be something they do, but they might have to lose an asset to do that. So I think they're really waiting on a DL move to get him up.
Yeah, this could lengthen Victorino. Well, I mean, it automatically does lengthen at least somewhat Victorino's leash to try and get on track. He's 2-for-20. He's not hitting well right now. So, you know, that part of the roadblock was looking like it was clearing, although that only opens up time. You know, other guys could go out there. They could put Brock Holt out there, who's already doing Brock Holtian things. You know, they still got Alan Craig. They've got assets. So even if Victorino continued to struggle, it wasn't a guarantee that Castillo would come up. But now, you know, the worst case for Castillo would be if Victorino got on track during this time and really put that roadblock up. So, you know, 10, 12-team mixed leagues, you can move on from Castillo at this point, I think, pretty safely, because there's going to be a more enticing name on the wire right now. Out in New York, Ivan Nova is going to throw live batting practice on Tuesday. So he's working his way back from Tommy John. He had his Tommy John in April of last year, so he's only going on a year right now. So it's not like I'm rushing out to roster him. You know, I got him in a couple deeper leagues where I can keep him on the DL, and it's not a major issue. But do you think we're going to see anything from Nova this year? I thought he had some intrigue coming into 2014, a lot of intrigue, to be honest. I liked what he did in 2013. And then he fizzled, obviously. Might have been hurt for all four of his starts. He was terrible in all of them, or three of the four, I think, maybe one good one. And then hit the shelf, obviously. And so we haven't seen Nova for a year now. But do you think we'll see anything this summer from Ivan Nova?
He made a couple changes to his pitching mix in 2013 that I really liked. You know, adding a two-seamer, I think it was, and sort of, you know, really pushing the upper limits on his ground ball rate. I thought that he could, you know, have a representative strikeout rate while keeping the homers down. I mean, that I kind of believed in a lot of the promise he showed in 2013. So I am, you know, happy to own him in a few places, you know, as a guy that, you know, I stashed away. But you know, he hasn't had lights out command every year. And so that's a little piece that you have to kind of see where it's gonna sit. And he, you know, he's still, even with the two seamer, he's, you know, still kind of fastball, you know, two seam curveball, kind of gave up on the slider, and doesn't have the widest array of pitches. But at 93 miles an hour, he would be the hardest throwing member of the Yankees rotation.
Nathan Eovaldi.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I was just thinking about Pineda was throwing 90 at the end of his start the other day.
Yeah, which
that's pretty surprising to me.
Very surprising. Not awesome there. That could be worrisome. I really love Pineda this year. I'm expecting big things, at least when he pitches. The problem is the health, obviously, with him. So for his velocity to be down like that, as you mentioned, it was alarming because he was up 93, 94 mostly last year. So now he's sitting 91, 92 this year. Ugh. We'll keep an eye on that for Pineda. But yeah, Nova probably not going to come back until June or so anyway at the earliest. But I think that, you know, he could give a little bit this summer to us. Maybe not even until August at that point, give him some ramp up time. So I know it's, you know, really long out to be even discussing picking him up, but I'll be talking about him more as he gets closer. Don't worry. Sticking in this is inexplicably or unintentionally, I should say, AL East centric, but that's just where the news is right now. Staying in that division, Drew Smyly is going to make his second rehab start today for AAA Durham. Obviously, they got to get him back. You know, that Tampa Bay team, I don't really know what to expect from them. They've been playing fine, nothing major, but the offense just is really uninspiring. So they're going to need all the pitchers that they can have, because I think that's how they're going to have to overpower teams, is with pitching. And so they need Archer, Smyly, Cobb, Odorizzi as a front four, and then we'll see if Nate Karns can stick as the fifth. I think pitching is going to be their key to success, so they got to get Smyly going ASAP. What do you think?
Yeah, I just actually had a long G-chat conversation with R.J. Anderson about, you know, the rotation and who's interesting there and what's going on. And because they've run Steve Geltz out there. They traded for Rasmo Ramirez, and he started. And then Matt Andrees, I think,
yes,
is how you say it.
He's starting tonight.
He's starting tonight. And Karns had, you know, one good start and one bad start, pretty much. So it's kind of... you know, I was kind of trying to get some help to read the tea leaves there. I think that I would say that Karns is the most likely fifth starter, because, you know, I saw from the numbers that Steve Geltz has a decent split finger, but you kind of have to have good command to get to the split finger. Definitely. You know, if you think about the guys who have great split fingers, most of the time they have great command. It's like, you know, Heron is the most absolute ridiculous extreme of this. But, you know, even a Uehara or whatever, you can't be throwing split fingers. You can't really command it. And so you can't really be throwing them for strikes. So, you know, and then Geltz has a pretty rough command. So I'm not sure he's going to get into the good enough counts to throw the split finger. And I don't know, the stuff can really overcome the command. We'll see about that. Erasmo, you know, he got pounded, and, you know, it's starting to me to feel like he's a reliever. I mean, the fastball and the change are okay, and the fastball will play up if he goes into the bullpen and you know, gets some boost there. But I also don't think he has a lot of leash in terms of his new organization. He just got traded. They traded a, you know, almost a waiver wire guy for him in Montgomery.
Sure.
So I don't think that they have a lot invested in him, and I think they just traded him to get a couple starts out of him, maybe put him in the bullpen. And Andrees has had really rough numbers, and then there's Matt Moore coming later. So I think that they might give Karns a half season and see what happens.
I agree with regards to Karns. I'm excited about him a little bit. I think he can have some good runs here. I think there can be some decent strikeout numbers from Karns. I think he could be somebody who sticks there. I'm souring on Erasmo Ramirez. I'm really getting over it. I know he's still pretty young, so that, you know, can't completely write him off, but complete utter disaster so far with Tampa Bay. It's wearing thin on me at this point. Last bit of news here, going to be going to strike you right in the heart probably, is that the first non-Latroy Hawkins save in Colorado went to Rafael Betancourt and not Adam Ottavino. Jason and I talked about this on Sunday because in my chat there was a lot of discussion about, you know, Hawkins blowing the save that day against the Cubs and, you know, whether it was time to go get Ottavino. And somebody in the chat mentioned, listen, Betancourt and Axford are there. Axford has to deal with his son right now who was bit by a rattlesnake at spring training. So he's actually on, you know, family leave. But I think it is a good point. As much as I like Ottavino, I've got him in a couple of leagues. It's not surprising to me that these two former closers could be ahead of him. And obviously Betancourt already was. I don't know if it was the fact that Ottavino has already pitched in four games. Maybe he just wasn't available because I wasn't watching that game yesterday. Or is it, you know, a situation where they want Ottavino to be that fireman? He is their best pure reliever. They want him as that fireman in for the seventh, eighth inning, because those are usually the biggest fires to put out anyway. And so maybe that's their situation with it, and they're not even worried about getting Ottavino there because they're going to put Axford or Betancourt there. What do you think?
You know, it's a pretty complicated situation, and I think one of the reasons it is so complicated is because there are some extreme situations here in terms of, you know, the different things that people use to decide who's going to close. I mean, you know, in terms of closer experience, I don't think you could have, you know, I guess, you know, Betancourt hasn't been a closer his whole career, but, you know, he's been the best closer most recently out of the group. And then, you know, I don't personally use that necessarily, but it is a very tempting thing to use, especially when you're thinking about the mindset of the manager, and something I used to call thinking stupid, which is
trying to
decide what the manager is going to do. But then on the other side, the only thing I've seen sort of numerically, and it's not even the strongest of relationships, is just that new closers, as a rule, have more velocity and have more strikeouts than mm-hmm. the guy they replaced. It's not, if you did a correlation, I'm sure the R squared would be low because there's always a different reason for a guy to come in or whatever. And it's really hard to use correlations and regressions to figure out who's going to close. So, but, you know, just if you take the populations of new closers that replace the populations of old closers, they have a higher strikeout rate and more velocity. So that's Adam Ottavino. And then sitting in between the two is John Axford, who has, you know, recent closer experience and, you know, also walks the lineup, but has good velocity, but also strikes guys out. So, I think it's a worthy discussion. There's also the arbitration matter that sometimes maybe sure. try to keep their young guys cheap. But I think that, you know, I've had a team official tell me that teams don't do that, which you can take with a grain of salt. I mean, they don't want the Players Association thinking they're doing that, so they probably don't want to tell anybody they're doing that.
Exactly. That's got to be at least a little bit of it, that they're not going to come out and be like, yeah, no, we totally do that. We love to screw guys over financially to the detriment of the team. No, it's fantastic. We love it.
You know, and I even tried to use pitching mix to predict closing changes by looking at, you know, fastball slider guys and seeing if maybe platoon splits were a big deal. But, you know, I think usually with a closer, your time on high velocity and you know, decent command. And so I think those two things can be the way beyond platoon splits on a fastball slider. And the other way to get beyond platoon splits on a fastball slider is have three sliders, which is, you know, Ottavino's thing, which we should be talking about him as having a curveball, a slider, and a cutter.
Sure, because of the way he deploys it.
Yeah, that's how he throws the thing. So, you know, I like him for having the most velocity, having the most strikeouts, and having, you know, three weapons where I'm not sure I want to give Axford more than one extra weapon. And Betancourt is, you know, he has two weapons and he's at 89. So, you know, Ottavino was not available yesterday. And so they have not made publicly a decision. But, you know, they could have said yesterday, well, Ottavino's not available. We'll give Betancourt the ride tonight, but it's going to Ottavino later. So it is an open competition.
Definitely.
I've got 6 shares of Ottavino. I've been publicly open about loving him and you know, made a bold prediction about him taking over. So, I think it's going to be him. But, you know, it's worth sometimes hedging your bets. Like, If you have Osuna and you have Ottavino, and you were trying to get into both of those pens, drop Osuna now for Betancourt. You just got to do it.
No, that makes complete sense there. What you're saying with regards to how to figure it out, what the manager's going to do with Betancourt. The one thing he does have, though, obviously he doesn't have that velocity, but the numbers are pretty good. I mean, he is striking guys out early. He has been a huge strikeout guy in the past, but it's been a couple years because he missed 2014 and then 2012, 2013 with Colorado. He was just under a strikeout per inning. So I don't know. I think the fact that Betancourt's done it and done it in Colorado is influencing them too, that, you know, they've kind of seen him be a 30 save kind of guy. So I'm not surprised that he got the chance, but I still like the old adage of draft skills, not roles. I believe that's Ron Chandler at Baseball HQ, and the skills are Adam Ottavino. And, you know, Betancourt, the thing is, when you're dealing with a 40-year-old, just as you were with a 42-year-old with Hawkins, with Betancourt at 40 years old, When it goes, it's going to go fast. It's not going to be some progression. His body will just give out. It'll be like, listen, you're 40. Go home. And, you know, so I don't think it's going to be something that will be a slow decline. Like you said, he already doesn't have any velocity. So I'm still sticking with Ottavino where I can. But like you said, if you're desperate for saves and you are trying to dip your hand in a few different pens, then, yeah, you're going to have to go out and pick Betancourt up. Because I think at the very least right now, it's going to be a share between those two, Ottavino and Betancourt. Now, you know, we're going to talk about some pitchers of note, because we're not going to be able to go as long as normal on the podcast today. You got a hard stop to get to the yard, I believe. But we're going to discuss some noteworthy guys, and we're going to start with a handful that you recently wrote about, since obviously you'll have the most knowledge about them. And you did the change. This week's piece was on new pitches from Jimmy Nelson, Nathan Eovaldi, and Brad Boxberger. So let's start with Jimmy Nelson. He had an excellent debut. Jason and I spoke about it. He instructed me to immediately go out and watch it as quickly as I could. Watched it, came away impressed. Then all of a sudden you're writing about it. So this is on the radar right now. Jimmy Nelson is on the radar with his new pitch after the one start, because you're going to have to jump quickly, because somebody like Nelson could burst onto the scene and be really special. So what did you find when you wrote about Jimmy Nelson and his new pitch?
Well, the amazing thing to me was, you know, sometimes you know, Colette makes this great list of the new pitches in the spring training, and, you know, the last year there was like 27, 30 guys on the list at the beginning of the season, and then, you know, during the season, you know, 10 of those guys don't really throw their pitch, and you know, it was all just sort of bluster, and then by the, you know, end of the season, you know, another 10 guys don't really get anything out of their new pitch, so, you know, that 30 becomes 10 who really benefited from the new pitch. So that's something to keep in mind when you see these new pitches all the time, is that, you know, only one out of three is really going to make a difference. But when I looked at Nelson, the amazing thing was he threw the curve more than his slider. Mm-hmm. You know, and I, you know, that's not, he's not afraid of it. He's not, you know, testing it out. He just jumped right in. And I think he was pretty excited because, you know, they faced the Pirates a lot. And I think he was, you know, ready to show them that he had some other wrinkle.
Exactly.
And they weren't ready for it. So I wouldn't be surprised. He's going to see the Pirates again. I wouldn't be surprised if you see it reverse a little bit back and he starts throwing more sliders again to righties, because he needs to. I think he knows he needs three pitches. He needs them to be different. And he talked about, you know, his grip, his spike grip, helping him have a curveball that's different from the slider and doesn't start morphing in between the two. So the slider is a little bit more horizontal and the curve is more vertical, and that gives him two planes to work in. It gives him, you know, three velocities, and it's not quite Garrett Richards, because Garrett Richards is 96 miles an hour and Jimmy Nelson is 93 miles an hour, but it's also the National League and not the American League. So I'm pretty excited about him. I got like one share of him, you know, last night when I was writing it. And, you know, I might be a little bit late on the bandwagon, but if he's still out there, I think I'd add him.
Yeah. You guys are selling me, both you and Colette. And then, you know, watching it, seeing it in action, I think you make an excellent point with regard to his first start coming against Pittsburgh. And yes, it was a catchless Pittsburgh, but the fact that they are an in division rival, he's like, listen, check out my new toy. in the first start. Then when he faces them again, oh, don't forget, I still have my old toys too. So I think we could definitely see some alteration in his pitch mix in the second start against them because he's facing them for a second time. So Jimmy Nelson, you probably got a chance to go out there and get him in a lot of leagues, folks. So go see if he's on your wire. I'm with you. Good call on him. Nathan Eovaldi, one of my buds, big fan of this guy. Been a big fan of him all the way back to the Dodgers. A little bit more tepid this year than normal because of the park change, the league change. And I was just saying, okay, I can't go as full bore as I've been going with him because, you know, I don't want to get burnt. That's plain and simple. I still believe in the skills, but he's still ironing it out. He's still evolving. And so I can't necessarily go full bore on Nathan Eovaldi again this year. And I didn't, but I think we're seeing some new things. Jason had him on the new pitch alert as well. In fact, he was the second guy that he noticed. They're talking all the way back in late December. Jason was getting information on him. What have you seen so far in that first start from Nathan Eovaldi's splitter?
Yeah, you know, Jeff Sullivan actually noticed the splitter late last year, which is pretty amazing because the classification systems weren't picking it up. So, they were labeling it as his changeup basically because it didn't know any better.
Sure.
And we've seen a lot of tepid advancements, quote unquote, from his changeup over the years. I mean, it's just been like, he's like the guy that every year is like, oh, my changeup's better this year. I'm gonna throw it more, and it just was never any good and never got any better. So this is a legit different pitch. You know, it has like 5-6 more inches drop than his changeup, his regular changeup. And when it looks nice in the games, it's great. When it looks okay, I would think it's an average splitter, which is a in his hands is going to be a great weapon. And then he's still learning the pitch. I mean, I showed in my piece today that sometimes cuts it, and I think that changes the horizontal value of the movement that he's showing because sometimes he's cutting it, and it's probably sometimes labeling it a slider, or sometimes labeling it a changeup or a splitter, but always going to change the overall average shape. So that means that one out of every four splitters he's throwing is no good. And that's going to mean that some are hangers, some are going to be banged. He's going to give up some homers. Which he was going to do anyway, but hopefully the sum of it is fewer homers because fewer lefties teeing off on him. And, he threw four of them in a row to Pablo Sandoval, and that's wow. Pretty gutsy for a new pitch. So, I'd say three of them look good. One of them, Pablo Sandoval, his eyes got real wide, and he just banged it foul. It was like a 450-foot fly ball, foul ball, so... he's got to just avoid that fourth one, but to get three in a row good and to have McCann keep putting the single down, and especially to throw the fourth after the third one got rocketed foul, I think that it's definitely a pitch that's here to stay. He's thrown it more than he ever threw his changeup, and I think it's going to change the way we think about him.
Excellent. That pleases me. I want to see Nathan Eovaldi break out and be a stud. It looked like he was on his way to a breakout last year, and then it fell apart. The fact is now, too, in terms of my investment in him, is that he's just more well-known, especially obviously going to the Yankees. That didn't help things, and he's just become more and more of a chic breakout type of guy. So his price went way up from last year, too, even coming off of a bad season. That tells you that people, are kind of looking beyond the numbers in the fantasy community because he allowed the most hits in the National League. He had a 10.1 hit per nine rate and a 4.37 ERA. Next up is Brad Boxberger. This is a guy I've been saying now for a while since McGee went down. Originally, I was on the McGee train saying, I'm still going to invest in McGee. But mid-March, I changed. I said, I'm just going to go full Boxberger because I think he's going to keep the job when he gets it. You're mentioning that he's got a new pitch. He's been great so far. What's going on with Brad Boxberger?
I mean, I don't know if he needs it so much because he's got a great fastball changeup combo. But, it's good that changeups sometimes have reverse platoon splits or as a rule, they have reverse platoon splits. So it might be good for him to have a weapon against same-handed guys. And showed his knuckle curve, his new knuckle curve against Adam Jones, and it's exactly what it was. I mean, Adam Jones probably goes up there thinking fastball change. He throws an outside fastball to Adam Jones at 94 miles an hour, and Adam Jones says, okay, that's the outside fastball. And then he throws a knuckle curve at 80, which starts out looking like it's going to be that outside fastball, and then just dove for the dirt. And Jones went right over the top of it. So
the gif that you had was so gross.
Yeah, so it's a great pitch. You know, and, you know, for what it's worth, given the fact that they never really fell in love with Jake McGee as the closer, he's a lefty, and he's currently hurt, I think, you know, I think, and they gave him the role, so there's no arbitration concerns. They went and said, okay, Boxberger's the closer. I think he might be the closer all year.
Mm-hmm. No, I like I said, that's the feeling that I had coming in, and I started drafting that way, waiting on him a little bit and feeling like I was getting a full season closer at a pretty good discount too, because the strikeout rate is obscene. Let's talk about a couple other guys that maybe that you haven't necessarily written about recently, but who are doing some things that, you know, are kind of hitting the radar here. I saw you tweet out about this guy, and I'm very intrigued. It's Chris Heston out in San Francisco. Does San Francisco have yet another solid pitcher? Maybe not. You know, we're not talking Mad Bum levels or anything like that, although he's pitching at Mad Bum levels so far with a .69 ERA in two starts. But Chris Heston, you know, I think he's getting a lot of comparisons to Matt Shoemaker because he's a little bit of an older guy. Command and control seems to kind of be – it doesn't seem to have overwhelming stuff. I don't know a lot about him, and I didn't get to catch the start yesterday, but I saw you tweeting out. So talk to me a bit about Heston for the Giants.
You know, I think he's a really interesting guy. I mean, he's an extreme ground ball guy. He throws a sinker a lot, and the sinker has a lot of movement. I mean, I think that's a decent place to start. I think, you know, he recently had a bit of a velocity boost that got him into, I would say, the area where it's now, it's not plus velocity, but it's usable. So that, you know, in the past when, you know, people worried if it was even, you know, even usable velocity. Now he's below average. You know, by the end of the game, he was 89, 90, and maybe more 89 than 90. But, you know, the sinker is really nice. It has 10 inches of arm side run. That's pretty high. And it just gets tons of ground balls. And that's a good place to start. And then, you know, his changeup has good shape. It has, you know, 2 more inches of drop. And there's a 7-8 mile an hour difference between it and the sinker, so that's a decent changeup. And then he's got some weird breaking ball thing where I don't know if it's two pitches or one pitch. They look very similar until, you know, the curve kind of drops out at the bottom where the slider doesn't. So I want to talk to him about his breaking balls because I think it's possible he's kind of sort of manipulating one pitch to a little bit, but. In any case, it's a 5-pitch mix if you count the four seam. He doesn't throw very much, so 4-pitch mix, good command. You know, if he was in, you know, Colorado, I might be more worried about the velocity. But, you know, San Francisco is going to cover up some mistakes, and, you know, I don't think necessarily that the Giants, you know, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious they don't want to make Pettit a starter. And I think it might have to do with the fact that he relies on deception. And
I agree with the idea of not making Yasmeiro Petit a full-time starter. I don't think he's got the ability to get through a lineup a bunch because, first off, if they have any lefties, he's in trouble. But he's got home run issues. He is a deception guy. You know, the home run issues are pretty much tied to the lefty issue, too. Those kind of go hand in hand. He doesn't give up a ton of righty homers. But really, I don't think he can handle a not, you know, maybe against Milwaukee. Spot start him against Milwaukee with their one, maybe or two lefties now. They got Adam Lind and Scooter Jeanette. But, you know, a team that has a mixed lineup or, heaven forbid, a lefty-heavy lineup, there's no possible way you could start Yasmeiro Petit. So I agree. They're probably looking at somebody like Heston thinking, you know, we got to try to get – you know, a ton of innings out of somebody like this. So he's intriguing me after two starts here. I'm definitely, you know, I'm not rushing out. Like I said, he's not some young buck that's going to take a big leap here. He's a 27-year-old. He made his debut last year for a little bit, 5 1/3 innings. But if he could be somebody useful, the park that he's in, keep him out of places like Coors, maybe out of Arizona as well. I think you can milk some decent stuff out of Chris Heston here. I shouldn't have said milk some decent stuff, though. That's a gross phrase.
Yeah.
Really shouldn't have said that.
Let's not do that. But, yeah, I mean, and then the fact that there's Tim Lincecum, I mean, flashes of brilliance as always, and you know, didn't walk the lineup, but also didn't strike out a ton of guys in his first outing. And I don't think, you know, showed me anything other than even more declining velocity. So I think Lindstrom's got 1 foot out of that rotation. So, you know, Kane could be hurt for the year if it turns out, it's Tommy John. The flexor is Tommy John. Peavy's had back problems, and Lindstrom has 1 foot out of the rotation. So even if they bring Pettit in, even if they bring Vogelsong in, there might still be a spot for Heston. So
agreed. So I feel like you can at least confidently roster him right now in deep leagues where, you know, deeper leagues where he would matter. I don't think 10-team mixer. I still think there's too many good guys that with higher upside. But you know, maybe even when you start to get – if you're really in a pinch for pitching in a 12-team mixer, I could see it. But
I'd probably say 12-team streamer, 15-team pickup.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Okay, next up is Jake Odorizzi, and he's had a couple of interesting starts in the way that they've been different. I think the first one I might have him mixed up. But one of them, he had like a ton of ground balls and you know, was kind of succeeding that way for a fly ball guy too. And then the other one, he was more the guy that we'd seen, fly balls and strikeouts sort of deal. So I might have those mixed, but I know it's been two different kind of – I think I got it right. I pulled up Fangraphs. The Baltimore start, his debut, 7 strikeouts, 2 hits, and you know, kind of the guy that we're used to seeing, fly balls. But then against Toronto yesterday in Toronto, 8 innings, 2 hits, just the 1 run, but only 3 strikeouts, but a 57% ground ball rate. So just kind of a different approach there. Are you seeing anything in him? First off, let me just ask, do you feel like he's a bust-out potential guy? Because I always saw him as maybe like a really good 4 ceiling, maybe kind of a fringe 3 because of what Tampa Bay can extract out of their pitchers sometimes. But do you see him as somebody who can be solid 3, maybe even a fringe 2 if things really got going for him?
I mean, he's kind of amazing to me because he's no longer almost anything like what he was in the Kansas City
system. Yeah.
I mean, he was back then you know, sinker, curve, slider, you know, and now he's high 4 seam splitter, cutter. And, you know, he's still got, maybe he throws 3 or 4 curves a game, and that's about the only thing that's left. And it kind of, it's like, what did you see in, like, why did you get him? And how much of each pitcher is his organization? And,
right,
you know, like, what are we looking for in pitchers these days then? If there are these pitchers that can be, like, almost just remolded. I mean, you know, is it just velocity? I mean, he threw 91. That's about the only, or 92, whatever. It's about the only thing he's got in common with the old Odorizzi.
It's too tough to cop out and just say that it is case by case, but I really think it is. And organization by organization, they're going to see different things and feel like they can mold it. And I was always on the camp of KC didn't get as ripped as people thought in the Myers for Shields deal because it was always the Myers for Shields. But Odorizzi continuing, you know, if he continues on a trajectory, it's going to tip the scales back in favor of the Rays, maybe as heavily as people once believed, even though they no longer have Myers. KC did make a World Series, so I don't ever think it's going to be a complete walkover deal. But Odorizzi is the forgotten piece at this point after a solid 168 innings last year. If he can evolve into a solid 200 inning guy, that's massive. Cause he's been, you know, no one even talked about him in that deal. It was always Myers for Shields. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, back to this year in the two different games. So he's got this cutter slutter, you know, this new pitch that he's got, that's kind of a hybrid. I think it pretty much looks like a cutter. I don't know why you would call it anything different. It doesn't have any drop like a slider, so it's kind of a frisbee.
It's a cutter. It gets a cutter classification at Brooks.
Yeah, there's no reason to call it a slutter other than the fact that it's fun to say the word slutter.
Of course.
You know, he's got this cutter. In the second game against Toronto, he doubled his usage of the cutter. So, you know, that could be this new toy thing with like the Jimmy Nelson phenomenon. But, you know, just the fact that he has the confidence and over the course of these two starts has thrown the cutter as much as the splitter, and the cutter and the splitter together more than the four seam, I think is saying something. It's saying that he's evolving, and he now kind of is willing. He has three strong pitches that you can't really anticipate. You know, it's like maybe you can anticipate the splitter, you know, when you're ahead in the count, but the splitter is one of those pitches where even if you anticipate it, it's hard to hit.
Exactly. Yeah. No. So, I like this new arsenal from him. I'm becoming more and more impressed. I wish he had maybe that third. You know, you always talk about that third level, that third velocity level. You know, and he's 92 with the fastball, and then really mid 80s with both the cutter and split. If he could drop down one more level, that'd be great. But that's just maybe nitpicking at this point because.
Well, I mean, he has that curve. He has that 70 mile an hour curve, which.
Like you said, though, it's super slow and just a couple times per game. Maybe if you sped it up, maybe if it was a high 70s curve, it might actually be more effective because, I don't know, I'm sure it's telegraphed at least a little bit when you're dropping it down that much. And like you said, he's not even throwing it that much anymore. So I think he's losing some confidence in it. So maybe he needs to look toward a different pitch. Or just stick with these three because they really are working. Maybe you could back the slider down even a little bit more if that was more of a low 80s splitter. If that was more of a low 80s splitty, then I think that would work even better too. But like I said, I might just be nitpicking because so far the new strategy is having some effectiveness.
Yeah, and you know the strike percentage on the curve is 56%, which is really really high. And obviously he's only thrown 9, but I think what he's going to do is steal strikes with it. He's gonna flip some curves over.
Yep.
On the first pitch, and nobody's gonna swing at that thing. And if he can get that, you know, just throw it real high and try to get it to fall into the middle of the zone, I don't think anybody will swing at it. And you know, that's a good way to get 0-1 on some guys. And you know, I've got a Brett Lowry piece waiting in the hopper, and he was talking about, you know, the mindset of a batter. You know, he had the 11 straight breaking balls at one point where he struck out four times on 12 pitches. And I was talking to him about that, and he said, you know, you just like you see it, you see one pitch, and maybe you don't see it so well, so you don't pull the trigger, and then it's 0-1. And then after 0-1, you think, you know, they're not going to come back with another breaker. They're going to bust me up top. And then, you know, another breaker comes, you foul it off, and it's 0-2. And then you have no idea if they're going to go up top or go with the breaker because, you know, they're not following normal count patterns anymore. And so I think that's the sort of thing that Odorizzi can do. He can flip over the curve when they're not looking for it, get 0-1, and then maybe they're thinking fastball, and he'll come with the cutter. You know, maybe they'll foul it off at 0-2. And then once he's, you know, got two strikes, the splitter's coming. So I think the thing that makes him have almost ace-like upside is the fact that he spent 168 innings last year striking out more than a batter per inning. So mm-hmm. I think his natural command, maybe that's what is still there for him, is that he has decent command. So his natural command of his pitches plus the split finger and now the cutter. Yeah, to me, he is much better than his projections.
I think he's definitely raised his ceiling with what we've been seeing from him and his evolution as a pitcher and his seeming willingness to learn too. Because I wouldn't be surprised if his splitter's been refined by one Alex Cobb. So if he's great at taking direction like that and kind of able to evolve and change his repertoire based on what people believe is best for him. I think we definitely have to add another level to Jake Odorizzi's ceiling. Anyway, you know, that's gonna wrap us up. Like I said, we got a hard stop for you to get out to the ball yard.
Well, let's do a would you rather.
Okay.
Let's rank some of the guys we've been talking about today.
Okay. Nelson.
So we got Eovaldi, Nelson, Odorizzi. I mean, we don't need to really put Heston on. I mean, he'll probably be at the end.
Yeah, let's rank those three first and then add some other intriguing names to see if we're taking them over guys who might have been perceived to be well above them until recently.
All right. You rank those three, and I'm coming up with names right now.
Okay, so I'm still going to go with let me see if I'm true to my rankings here. I don't want to be going too crazy. Yeah, see, I've got – I had Eovaldi and Odorizzi very close to start the season. They were one rank apart and in the same tier. I think Odorizzi's growth is enough to flip him up there, jump him up above Eovaldi, just barely there. And I had Nelson pretty well below the two, but now he cuts that gap much closer. So I'm going to go Odorizzi, Eovaldi, Nelson of the three that we're talking about. and then give me some names of guys that were definitely drafted ahead of them, but the perception might be changing based on the evolution of these three, and you know, maybe even a slow start of the others, or just the fact that those three are getting better. Who do you got?
Well, let's see, Brandon McCarthy.
Yeah, I think I'm taking – man, I'll tell you what, though. He did not have a good start yesterday, did McCarthy, but I was impressed with the way that he still went seven. Teams have got to love pitchers like that, that, you know, even when they don't have their best, they can still go out there and give you a full game because, yeah, they're getting some hits popped out of the yard, but he was still getting tons of strikeouts, and his pitch count wasn't elevated. He was at 98 through seven, even though he gave up five earned runs and had 10 strikeouts. But – I'm not going to take him ahead of the whole group. I'm going to have Odorizzi ahead of him. Then he slots in, then the other two.
Well, you know, he's sitting 93-7 right now, which is pretty amazing.
I mean, he's got 19 strikeouts in 12 innings to start. I maybe should have him ahead of Odorizzi, but I'm really sold on our chat about Odorizzi, and I love what Tampa Bay does with their pitchers. And then if you're talking long-term, I still have to have the health concern hanging over McCarthy's head. I know he went 200 last year, but that's the first time we've seen it, and he's 31. So that's why I'm going to give the slight edge. I only had those two one rank apart when I opened the season. Odorizzi, Bailey, then McCarthy. So I've got them both moved up overall, but not quite McCarthy leapfrogging Odorizzi.
Yeah, so I had McCarthy ahead of Odorizzi, and I think I might keep it that way. I mean, I tend towards National Leaguers anyway, but I think they've closed the gap. I only had them four or five apart, so I would probably put them in the same tier.
It's funny you mention that, by the way, with regards to favoring National Leaguers. I 100% get it. I advocate it. It makes sense. For whatever reason, whenever I look at my staffs, always AL laden. These last 2 years especially, I've noticed it. I'm coming out with so many AL guys, and I'm like, dang, Paul, you're really putting yourself behind the eight ball here, facing that extra pitcher, or that extra hitter, rather.
Probably they're probably a little bit cheaper because, you know, preferring the National League is a little bit fantasy 101.
Maybe,
so.
Yeah, maybe that's why. Maybe I'm subconsciously going for the market inefficiency. But, yeah, I keep laughing at myself when I come out with six AL guys, and obviously I like them all, but no – it's fair for that to be your decider between those two because, like I said, I've got them razor close between Odorizzi and McCarthy.
Okay, let's talk about some possible guys you might drop for a Nelson, Eovaldi, or I guess Odorizzi is probably owned by now. But let's say Nelson and Eovaldi are out there on the wire.
Okay.
And you own, let's see here, TJ House.
Oh, yeah.
Let's say you own TJ House, Brett Anderson, and Jason Hamill.
Okay. House, I would. Dropping. And it's more because those other two, I already liked them better to begin with. It's not it's not an overreaction to that first start because my pitching portfolio is going to come out soon, and you're going to see that I'm highly invested in House. So this is not a run away from House because the best offense in the league bashed his head in. It's just that I already liked Odorizzi and McCarthy ahead of him. Not McCarthy. We were talking about him. But Odorizzi and Eovaldi ahead of him, not Nelson. So I'm still going to stick with House over Nelson. But obviously Nelson has closed that gap because Nelson's my biggest mover of the guys we've talked about today from my draft season ranks.
Yeah, and so would you drop a Hamill?
Hamill, no. And then who was the last one? I'm sorry.
Hamill, House, Brett Anderson.
Oh, so yeah. Oh boy, that's tough. No, I think I'm gonna ride Brett Anderson above Eovaldi and Nelson. I'm getting really sold on Odorizzi here. Hamill, I'm keeping above all of them. I had him higher. I'm fine. I'm gonna give him, you know, a couple starts here. Although he was in the same tier, he was just at the top of the tier of Odorizzi and Eovaldi. Excuse me. That last one is tough, Brett Anderson, because I told people this year don't even bother because he's going to get hurt, whatever. But he's not hurt right now, and I do have him on a couple of teams. So if I drafted him, I'm going to stick with him because, you know, outside of one time, any time that Brett Anderson's pitched, he's been good. It's just a matter of volume. And he wasn't bad in his first start, a baseline quality start. I got to stick with him. I have to.
Yeah, but you know, he's kind of a grounder guy, and I don't think he has a strikeout upside. So, you know, I'm dropping Anderson for Odorizzi. I think, you know, Eovaldi, still enough of a question mark. Nelson, still enough of a question mark, even with his new pitch.
No, we match there, by the way. I should have made it clear. Yeah. Odorizzi is staying above all of them, but the other two is where I'm holding Anderson.
But, you know, for me, Hamill and Anderson are a little bit lower ceiling than, you know, Nelson or Eovaldi with a new pitch.
That's fair.
So, you know, if my ace was Alex Wood, for example, then I might be more inclined to drop a Hamill or Anderson for an Eovaldi or Nelson because I might need to find that second ace.
Trying to strike it rich, exactly. That makes sense. Let your team composition.
In 10 teams leagues, you might not be owning Hamill or Anderson anyway, so you know, that's not really the conversation. But in a 10-team league, let's say you have John Lackey at the bottom of your bench, and you are looking to strike it rich. I think it'd be okay to drop Lackey for Odorizzi. I think it'd be okay to drop Lackey for Nelson, and I think you could even say for Eovaldi. I know Lackey is boring and consistent, but he's also, you know, old and an injury risk, and he's not going to be your ace no matter what. So it's definitely a floor versus ceiling situation. So I think you can do something crazy like drop Lackey for lightning in a bottle, you know, if you need it.
Yeah, I don't think that's bad advice at all, because like you said, you know, and you mentioned in the composition of things, that's what you really have to be focused on. How did you build your staff? How does that fit in? Do you already have a lot of risk with some upside guys who could bust on you? Then keep Lackey. But if you already have a bunch of crusty vets along with Lackey, you know, you got Felix, not that he's a crusty vet, but you know, the established vet, you got Felix headlining, and then maybe you got Shields and Wainwright, and you know, that's the front of your rotation, and then you got Lackey somewhere in there, and you don't have a lot of those high upside guys, then you could go out and do that, because you got three horses at the front who are likely going to give you just 200 plus solid innings. You can be a bit more risky, but like you said, with the Wood, you know, if you're trying to catch that lightning in a bottle and risk is what you're going for, then fine. But if Wood was my ace, personally, I'd be more inclined to stick with Lackey, because I would want some of that stability, at the back end of my rotation. But it all depends on the team composition that you're going for. I think one thing I focused on more this year was actually building staffs that kind of wove together and their skills fit, instead of just taking the best guys all the time and being overloaded on certain stats and under on others. I just went ahead and tried to match the puzzle pieces together, which maybe people have been doing for years, but I've usually been take the best guys. I don't care. This year I tried to put together more puzzles.
Yeah, I think, you know, I try, you know, especially with my batting, I tried to do more, you know, get Castellanos and Betts, because, you know, the numbers love Betts, but the scouts love Castellanos. So, you know, I've been trying to even out my approach a little bit, so that it's not, you know, so all or nothing, and so that I have different ways of finding sleepers. And so I definitely hear you. Hopefully we've helped some people put these pitchers together. I got to run to the park though.
Yeah, you get off to the park. And by the way, we'll spend one episode soon just talking about Mookie Betts. But until then, by the way, you better get to Oakland or San Francisco when Boston is there and try to talk to him. That would be awesome. But I'll let you go. Get out to the yard. We'll talk in 2 days.
I interviewed him in the minor leagues.